So thank goodness I decided to keep going. Now, that doesn't mean it was easy. There were times where I left some of these meetings with little tears in my eyes. But I knew I had to get over this, so I had to grin and bear it. I also believed that with the right attitude, I would get over it sooner or later. So my goal was to do as many of these presentations as I possibly could. I wanted the meanest, rudest, most disrespectful groups that I could find. And boy, did I ever find them. Really, for me, it was great conditioning. Now, perhaps the best thing it's done for me is to help me with my speaking now. So as I'm in front of a large group, I mentally don't waste time wondering if somebody's writing something negative or positive, for that matter, about me. My attitude now is, oh well. Now, did I ever want to give up? I would be lying to you if I said no. You bet I did. It was one of the most difficult challenges related to business that I personally have ever experienced. But if I had made the choice to give up, I would have never been able to reach many of the goals that I've attained today. Now, I also viewed doing these presentations as temporary, a stepping stone to the next level, even though I did them for 3 years, and that's really not my definition of temporary, but that's the way it goes. I was shooting for maybe a year or so. Now, another thing that I did to enable me to keep the pace of going and not to give up was that I did realize that it was temporary. I had to complete this level before I got to the next one. And what did that do for me? Well, it gave me purpose. For example, let's say that we observe two men in your backyard and they're digging with a shovel. And we'll say that they've been digging for now, oh, at least an hour. One of the men looked very despondent and he's very exhausted. He also slowed down tremendously in comparison to when he began. It's obvious, too, that he has no desire to be in your backyard digging with that shovel. Now we observe the other gentleman. He is completely the opposite. Even though he, too, has been digging for about an hour, he's very excited, digging at a far greater pace than his counterpart. He's even got a smile on his face as the sweat is dripping. Now, as you look at him, it's clear to you that he is very exhausted, but he seems to be handling it well. Now, what's the difference between the two? Both men are engaged in the same work, but both have very different attitudes. The difference is purpose. The man who is digging begrudgingly was asked to see how much dirt he could dig up in an hour. The man who seems to be enjoying it was told that there was $1 million worth of hidden treasure under him. Now, I know this is only an illustration, but it makes a good point, doesn't it? Two people can be doing the same task while one hates it and the other loves it. Remember, the purpose behind the action is going to determine your drive and enthusiasm. Let me repeat that. The purpose behind the action is going to determine your drive and your enthusiasm. So then, as I was doing these presentations, when I would start getting down or discouraged, I would remind myself of the reason that I was doing them and what it will eventually lead to. In other words, I constantly reminded myself of the purpose. And in fact, I can remember and I would say, you know, one day I'm going to go ahead and talk about these bad or tough times with other people in my presentations. It was that type of thinking that helped me keep going forward. Before we go any further, just for emphasis, let's go over the definition of being persistent again. Like previously, ask yourself this question. Do I fit the mold of being a persistent person according to this definition? And if so, what can I do to maintain my persistence? And if not, what can I do to improve? Here we go. Persistence can be defined as never giving up. Note the following: despite, dislike, disapproval, or difficulties, and to endure despite obstacles. And again, some other words or synonyms that have like meanings are lasting, steady, fixed, immovable. Well, how are you doing so far? Now, as we did before, let's go over the opposite or the antonym of persistence, and that was wavering, unsure, hesitant, vacillating, easily worn down. So we want to keep thinking of these definitions. Now, while I was doing some of these mini presentations, I did learn another vital lesson as to what prevents people from being really persistent. It's our emotions. Now, let's spend some time on this. Emotions. I believe that to be a very, very powerful word with a lot of depth and meaning. Now, stop and think about it for a moment. What could you do if you had full control, I mean full control, over your emotions? Imagine if you were always happy or content. It would make life so much easier, but the question is, what prevents us from always being that way? And of course, there are a number of answers, but the answer that I'm looking for really is ourselves. Though a lot of people don't believe that or are not willing to admit it, it is a fact. Now, the next thing to consider is that most people are heavily controlled by external stimuli. Now, think about it. In general, when we feel sad, we usually act how? We usually act sad, don't we? And on the other hand, when we feel happy, we usually act happy. In other words, we are very susceptible to external stimuli. So usually when we feel sad, we don't act happy. But are we capable of doing that? Feeling sad and acting happy? We certainly are, aren't we? But why don't we do that? Basically, it's because it is a psychological reason. Allow me to share with you from a psychological point of view why that would be difficult. It's really because we would associate doing that as a mental conflict or contradiction. See, from childhood, most of us have been programmed to be a slave to our feelings. That's why when we feel sad, we act sad. Many times our parents may have had a lot to do with this type of programming. Now, I know you've seen this before. I certainly have. You ever see a small child bump its head maybe on a corner of a table, and right after doing so, the child starts screaming. And at that point, the mother of the child looks over to see what's happened, and she starts screaming louder than the child. Now, the poor little kid sees mommy screaming because she saw him screaming, and now he's all confused, and he screams even louder than she does. Mom hears him scream louder, and so on and so on. See my point? Then, there's the mom who looks over to see why their child is screaming and runs over and says, "It's okay, honey. Let me see. Oh, it's not that bad. See, that's a big boy." Big difference, isn't it? In the first scenario, mom, without even realizing it, is programming her child to be a slave to his feelings. The latter scenario is just the opposite. Now, let's not stop here. Hopefully, we've also been taught not to lie. Now, what does that have to do with this subject? Well, if you feel sad and act happy, that really becomes an internal conflict, and subconsciously, we might feel or reason that we're lying to ourselves because we're doing opposite of what our feelings are telling us to do. In other words, if we experience a negative feeling, we usually reward it with a negative action or thought. But if we experience a negative feeling and don't reward it with a negative action or thought, we will take more control if, in fact, we choose to ignore those feelings. That's another important point, ignoring our feelings. When it comes to being persistent, we don't want to be like bumper cars. Take a moment and think about how much control bumper cars really have. It's not much, is it? That's part of the fun of driving them. Someone hits you and you're off course in the direction they hit you, and then you run into someone else and the same thing happens to them. The ability to ignore feelings is a choice. The key now here is how would we determine which feelings are the ones that we should reward and which feelings should be ignored? The answer is quite simple. Here it is. And by the way, if you're taking notes, I strongly suggest you write this down. And if you're not taking notes, I strongly suggest you write this down. And if you're driving or something like that, remember it and write it down later. Here it is. When my feelings are not in harmony with my goals, ignore my feelings. Now, I'll repeat that for those of you who are writing it down. When my feelings are not in harmony with my goals, ignore my feelings. Think about that. This is a very powerful statement. So how do we apply that statement when it comes to our emotions and being persistent? If you're embarking on some journey and someone turns you down and you seem to be running into dead leads one after another, that might cause you to be discouraged. In other words, being or feeling discouraged is an emotion. Now, if your goal is to keep going forward no matter what would we have to do with our feelings of being discouraged according to our statement? Remember, when my feelings are not in harmony with my goals, ignore my feelings. We would have to ignore those feelings, wouldn't we? What's the other alternative? That would be to reward the negative feelings of being discouraged. Now, how do we do that? Well, that's pretty simple, isn't it? As we try to keep going forward, let's say we start getting a little bit discouraged, we get a few more no's, and before you know it, we give in to the emotion and quit. That's the other alternative. So, as you are traveling on your different journeys, take the time to analyze your emotions. As obstacles and challenges are brought or thrown before you, what kind of feelings do you manifest? It might be a wise thing to keep a little diary of your feelings on a day-to-day basis to, number one, identify the feeling or feelings you're more prone to experience, and second, write down your actions after you experience them. Now, that will assist you in determining if you are rewarding your negative feelings or if you're ignoring them. Not to sound like a broken record, but having a goal is a must. They really are the glue to any type of success. I'm sure you can see how important they are with this last example that I've shared with you. If we know that we are to ignore our feelings when our feelings are not in harmony with our goals, and we don't even know what our goals are, well, that's going to cause a real problem, isn't it? What will actually happen is that because we may not have a goal or goals or be goal-oriented, we will be very easily sidetracked due to negative feelings. I really believe this is a very, very powerful point. Now, recall just a few moments ago, I said, imagine if you could always be happy or content. It would make life so much easier. Remember the question, what prevents me from always being that way? If we buy the fact that it's usually ourselves who rob most of our happiness, we will now take an in-depth view of how we choose to react to certain circumstances. By being more aware of what's going on around us and how we react to external stimuli, we will more likely be able to nip those negative feelings in the bud before they get a chance to blossom into feelings that may make us want to quit or give up. Too often, people are not able to keep going forward with their goals because of what others think about them or what they perceive others are thinking about them. Again, this type of thinking creates negative feelings that are usually not in harmony with our goals and can spell disaster. So remember, never give up. I heard a story some time ago that I think is worth sharing with you. I don't even know where I heard it from, but I do understand it was true. It's about a man who truly knew what it meant to never give up. He owned a little shop in an old strip mall, and he had been in that mall for many, many years, and he built this little business from scratch with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But one day, a group of investors came by the mall. It was their vision to tear down the entire mall and build a new modern one. Being that each individual store owner owned their own building, the investors would have to buy everyone out to make their new project a success. Well, they were able to buy everyone out except, take a guess who, that's right, this gentleman who had built his business from scratch. He refused to sell out to these investors, so they offered him more money. He still refused. They offered him even more, and he still refused. It was obvious to the investors that he showed no signs of budging. He wasn't going to give in or give up. So the investors started playing dirty pool. They told the man that if he doesn't want to sell, okay by them, but they're going to build the new mall around him, and his store will be an eyesore and no one will visit his store because it's going to look run down compared to the new mall. The man stuck to his guns as the buildings around him were knocked down and the new construction went in its place. It was obvious that the new mall was going to be very attractive and beautiful. So the investors tried one more last time to get him to sell out, but to no avail. He would simply refuse. Now, he wasn't going to give in at this point, and at this point he had to think, well, he's getting concerned, what is he going to do? His store looks pretty bad in comparison to this new mall. But due to his never-quitting attitude, he came up with a brilliant idea. The mall was just about completed, and everyone was preparing for the mall's grand opening. Now, keep in mind this man's dilemma. No one would want to visit his store because the new mall was built around his establishment and he doesn't feel that he would get any traffic at all. So here's what he does on the opening day of this new mall. He put a very, very large banner over the entrance of his store that read, Mall Entrance. Pretty good, isn't it? It's incredible how creative we can be when we are determined never to quit. And on the other hand, it's incredible how empty and unfulfilling life can be when we're not determined and easily give in. You know, I was just reading an article about bees. We've heard the expression busy as a bee, and after learning more about the bee, I can certainly understand where that came from. Talk about never giving up. Here's what I learned. Bees collect nectar in their honey sacs, which is an enlargement of their esophagus. To fill the sac, they must visit between 1,000 and 1,500 visits to individual florets. 1,000 to 1,500, that's a lot. They don't stop until they accomplish their goal or mission. Now, can you imagine the mind of a lazy bee, one that easily gives up? Well, he's flying around and around to get some nectar. Oh, there's a flower. He lands on it. No nectar here. Oh, there's a flower. Well, that's just too far for me to fly. I won't go to that one. And he thinks this way, oh, well, I have to get up early to work hard. I don't want to do that. No, he certainly wouldn't think that way if he was a busy bee. They keep going until they get the job done. Another thing that I feel prevents us from being persistent is the fact that many times we believe too much of what we hear. Here's another statement for you to write down for those of you who are taking notes. It's a good one. The smart person believes half of what he hears. The intelligent person knows which half to believe. Let me repeat that one more time. The smart person believes half of what he hears. The intelligent person knows which half to believe. Don't believe everything you read. You know, Mark Twain once read an article in a newspaper that said that he had died. So he wrote the editor of the paper to tell him that the story about him being dead was greatly exaggerated. Don't believe everything you see. That reminds me of the family who will never forget the excitement when they shaved off Grandpa's beard and they found out it was Grandma. And by all means, don't believe everything you hear. Again, the smart person believes half of what he hears. The intelligent person knows which half to believe. Now, here's the wisdom in following this example. It is so easy to get caught up into believing what we hear. For example, let's use this as an illustration. Let's say that you make a phone call to contact Mr. So-and-so. The switchboard operator gets on the phone and says he won't be in for another 2 hours, and then she offers to give you his direct phone number to his office, and you write that down. Now, remember the point. The smart person believes half of what he hears, and the intelligent person knows which half to believe. The operator told us what? That Mr. So-and-so would be back in 2 hours. Now, if we are to believe her, it would mean that our contact would be in 2 hours. But by applying the wisdom of the smart person believes half of what he hears, the intelligent person knows which half to believe, we'll view things a little differently. By the way, you'll hear me repeating that statement constantly because I want you to really get it. Now, how do we know that he's going to be in the next 2 hours? Because she said so? Don't get me wrong here, I'm not saying that she's lying, but she may not really know. Maybe he just ran out of the office in a real rush, and she yells at him, "When will you be back?" And as he's walking out the door, he says, "In about 2 hours," and continues to walk away from her and concludes by saying, "If my appointment holds." Now, maybe she didn't hear him say that part. So he goes to his appointment, they don't show, he comes back to his office through the back door. See my point? You just never know. Why? Because the smart person believes half of what he hears. The intelligent person knows which half to believe. Okay, now we know this. So what? Well, with this scenario, after the operator tells me he'll be back in 2 hours and she gives me his direct phone line, I personally would call it in about 10 or 20 minutes. Why? Because I don't believe everything I hear. I'm not that easily programmed by other people. He could very well be there. He might have changed his plans without telling the operator. You never know. Now, here's another great example of how this principle can help. In my company, we focus heavily on getting on TV talk shows and on other TV programs. Now, to get on these shows, it's best to get the names and the phone numbers of producers. You can purchase books that give you that information. So we bought one for a particular show that we were interested in getting on. It gave the name of the producer, and then beside it, it read, "Mail them your press kit, but do not call them to follow up. If they're interested, they will call you." Now, before we go any further, we need to remember what? That's right, that the smart person believes half of what he hears. The intelligent person knows which half to believe. Now, let's repeat the instructions one more time. It said to mail them your press kit, but do not call them to follow up. If they're interested, they will call you. First of all, the chance of a TV network calling you is slim to none. And as we've discussed earlier, if you leave it up to them to call you, who's in control? That's right, they are, not you. Now let's say 1,000 people send this producer their press information, and they all believe what they read. Don't call the follow-up. If they're interested, they will call you. But you decide not to believe everything you read. Now, here are a number of possible reasons why you shouldn't believe the "don't call, they will call you." Maybe the person who wrote the book from which we got this producer's name from had gotten the information wrong. Who really knows how old this information in this book is? Maybe the same producer doesn't work there anymore, and the producer who replaced them doesn't mind phone calls. Do you see how incredibly vital it is to think in this manner? It forces you to keep going, and it helps you to be very creative in pursuing your mission. Now, I recall one time getting the name of a producer of a real big show, but I had a very difficult time getting the producer's direct phone number. I had the main number of the switchboard, but the operator wouldn't give me the direct number for the producer. so I came up with a really creative way to get the number. I figured that this large TV network would obviously have more than one phone number. They've got to have many phone numbers. Now think about it. Years ago when they had put in their phone lines, do you think they may just need one or two? Nah. Let's say they needed 100 numbers or even more, and many of them literally have that many numbers. They would be given something like 555-1200 to maybe 555-1299. Now, what knowledge does that give you? Well, it gives you a lot. If you knew the switchboard's number was 555-1200, then I would try dialing 555-1201, and then 1202, and 03, and 04, and so on. Sometimes I would get voicemails, other times I would hit the jackpot and get the producer. Now, one day as I was doing this, a lady answered the phone, and she simply said, "Archives." Now, that told me that most likely she worked in a room with tons of news and story segments stored on video. So I figured it would be no sweat off her back if she gave me the phone number that I needed. But what I had to do was figure out a way to get the phone number from her. So after she said "Archives," I said, "Oops, I've got the wrong extension. I'm trying to get so-and-so." She said, "No, he's not at this extension. Let me look it up in the directory here." Bingo, and she gave it to me, and I went from there. Well, there's more to it. I made a note of the phone number of the archive department just in case I need another number at that network. See, at least now I know that they have a directory by that phone, and that's a quick way of getting some phone numbers that I might need. Isn't that creative? All this came about because of one belief. The smart person believes half of what he hears. The intelligent person knows which half to believe. Maybe you're told that you have to be a certain age to do this or to do that, or you have to have a college degree. And if you don't have one, well, no one's going to listen to you, or you have to be a certain weight or a color. Don't believe it. Challenge it. Here's another example where I apply the same type of thinking. If I'm making a phone call for the first time to someone and I get their voicemail and it says, "I'm not in today, but I'll be back in the office tomorrow. Leave a message and I'll call back." Well, just because he said that he isn't in today doesn't mean that he really isn't in. Maybe he made that message yesterday and hasn't had the chance to change it this morning. Be creative and persistent in your thinking. Now, I encourage you to take the time and to analyze your own circumstances and situations. Ask yourself, how susceptible am I to easily believing what I hear, what I read, and what I'm told? Next time you're told something, ask yourself, by believing this, will it slow me down or enable me to keep pursuing my goal? If it could slow you down, what could or should you do differently to go around the obstacle? So the moral of the story is never assume. You know, it's like the gentleman who loves animals and he's got birds and monkeys and rabbits and you name it. And he's really fond of his exotic rabbits, especially. Anyway, it's time for him to go on vacation, just a little mini vacation, and he decides to go away for about 2 days. So he makes sure that all of his animals are all secure and nice and safe and all the cages are locked. Unfortunately, he's been having lots of problems with the neighbor's dog, who is always trying to get through his fence to get some of his animals. So sometime after he leaves for his vacation, his neighbor looks out, the guy who owns the dog, he looks out the window and his dog has gotten one of the rabbits. The dog is tossing it up in the air time and time again. The man runs outside and doesn't know what to do. So he runs up to the rabbit, and it's stone cold dead. He's all nervous and shaken now. That rabbit was worth lots of money. So he decides to take it into the house and bathe it. He shampoos it, and he dries it off with a towel. Then he gets the blow dryer, and he gets the rabbit all fluffy looking again. He spends about 2 hours doing this. Then he sneaks over to his neighbor's yard with the rabbit and he puts it back into the pen. He props it up, hoping his neighbor won't notice a thing when he gets home. Well, the next day, this animal lover comes home and the neighbor's now looking out the window as he pulls up and he's starting to shake again. He just can't handle it. He decides just to stay in the house and try to keep himself occupied. A few minutes later, he hears a knock on the door. He peeks out the window and yep, it's his neighbor. He is now scared to death. He thinks or assumes he's been caught, but he's going to try to act as if nothing's happened. He opens the door and his neighbor says to him, "You know, the weirdest thing just happened to me. My rabbit. And by this time, the man just knows he's been caught, but he's still going to act as if nothing's happened. "My rabbit, you see, it's in the cage and it looks beautiful." So the neighbor says to him, well, I don't understand. Well, the rabbit owner says, well, you see, just last week it was very, very sick. It was so sick that it died and I buried it in the backyard. And now somehow it got back in the cage. Well, you know the rest of the story. Friends, never, never assume. It could cause you to give up. Don't always believe everything you believe. I'll share a personal example of this. I love to fly, and I'm rated in both airplanes and helicopters, and I try to fly an average of between maybe 400 and 600 hours a year. And I had always thought it would be neat to fly a jet, but didn't allow myself to think that big. I thought it was a little far-fetched for me. Then I said to myself, why not? Though I felt a little uncomfortable with the idea, I started investigating it further. What was involved? How much money would it take? Could it be done in small steps, such as maybe first leasing the aircraft, and how much would it cost, and so on? The first few calls didn't go my way. I wanted to give up. It seemed that it would be another 10 years before I could even get close to this goal. Flying a Learjet isn't an overnight goal, especially if you're paying for it on your own without going to another company that you might work for who would pay for it for you. For example, if you wanted to go from first officer, that's the first thing you go through in the jet, then after first officer you go to captain, you're looking at about a $20,000 investment. Now, I would get all the sales magazines that I could get that would advertise jets, and I called and I called and I called, and no one was willing to work with me. One of my stipulations was that I wanted to fly the jet myself. Now, most jets need two pilots, and the Learjet was no different. No one would put me on their insurance because I didn't work for them, or for whatever reason. Maybe I didn't at that time have enough experience, which was really the truth for a lot of it. But I still didn't give up. One day, I saw an ad for a lease, and I decided to call the owner of the jet and meet with him. Now, think about it from his perspective. How often does a kid my age, at that particular time, I was barely 30 years old, visit him about leasing or buying a jet? That's a hard thing to try to convince some people of. That is what went through my mind before I flew to the airport to meet him. Would he take me for real? Well, he did. Less than 2 months later, I was checked out in the Learjet, and I now fly myself to many of my seminars in the Learjet. What an incredible rush. And if you would ever like to come along with me for a thrill of a lifetime in that jet, get in touch with my office for dates and locations. And again, never, never give up. You just don't know what can happen. Now imagine for a moment that you're in a jungle, and as you make your way through, you come to the end of a cliff. 50 feet below, you see there are dangerous rapids. The only way to get to the other side is a thick, long rope that is attached from one side to the other side of the rapid. Now, you can't go back, and you must cling onto the rope to get across. If you fall, the chance of survival is slim to none. Now, my question to you is, once you grab onto the rope, how many fingers will you use to hold on with? If you're like most people, I think you'll say all of them, and I certainly agree. Why? It's common sense. The more fingers you hold on with, the better chance you have of not letting go. Then the opposite would be true too, wouldn't it? The least amount of fingers we hold on to, the least chance we have of holding on. So 10 fingers gives us the best odds. Now let's use 9 fingers. We have now lost 10%, haven't we? 7 fingers, 30%, and so on. Here's the point. Whatever it is that you need to be persistent about, hold on as much as you can. In other words, don't put all your eggs in one basket. One of the key things that prevent many people from being really persistent is that they put too much hope in one avenue. They have an idea, or let's say a product that they want to sell. They show it to one person, and that person says, well, let us think about it for a week. So now for that week, they're all excited. The money is spent in their mind before they get it. And they've bought this new car, new house, whatever, and I think you've done that before. I know I personally have fallen into that trap. Anyway, a week goes by and no sale. You feel that the world is caved in on you. Why? Three words. Loss of hope. Think about it. If you're dangling above those rapids, holding on to that rope with one finger and you let go, will you lose hope? You bet you will if you don't die of shock on the way down. But let's say you are holding on with 10 fingers and you let one go. Have you lost all your hope then? Not hardly. You've got 9 left. Life works the same way. If you only have one or two means or avenues to pursue your goal and you lose them, it can be very, very discouraging. We've got to get as much hope as we possibly can. I share this example with people who are in sales or own their own company who are just getting started, or maybe they don't seem to be doing as well as they should be. Here's the common scenario or complaint I get. Someone says, "You know, I had a potential client call me and they want a proposal. It took me 2 hours to get the proposal together for them. Now, if I get this account, it would be worth X amount of thousands of dollars. Boy, that would be great, wouldn't it?" Here's where they set their own trap. They sit idle waiting for the client to give them a yes or a no, when in fact they should be putting out a ton more proposals. That's right, a ton more. If a person puts all their hope in thinking that this one proposal is going to go through, it's going to be bitterly awful if it doesn't. What makes it even worse is if the proposal isn't accepted, it's going to make it that much more difficult to get back up on your feet and try again because of the negative association that you may have developed previously. And it goes similar to this. "Well, I could never get those big accounts. Why do I bother even trying? I'll just put out another proposal and get the same answer. It just doesn't seem worth it." I'll admit it, I'm human too, and I used to say that. So then how do we get over this hurdle? The answer in itself is simple. Doing it is where the challenge takes place. The answer is to hold on with all 10 and more if you can. If we only have one proposal out there and it ends up being a no, that's going to be hard to swallow. But if we have 10 or 20 or 50 or 70 proposals out, if we lose only one, well, now we've got 19 or 49 left to go. In other words, we're still holding on with all 10 fingers. This way, we increase the odds. It gives us a lot of hope. You know, I remember when I tried to get a promoter in this business to market my seminars. Boy, was that a tough task. If I only contacted one promoter and he said no, I felt like it was all over. So I made it a point to contact as many promoters as I possibly could. Comb the area with a fine-tooth comb. Look for as many avenues as you possibly can to pursue your goal. Don't stop with one or only a few. Remember, the more you have, the more hope it gives you. And I don't think many people have more hope than they know what to do with. Always keep looking for ways to find and add more hope to your persistence. Hope gives you the drive. The more hope you have, the more drive you'll have. They work hand in hand together. I recall early in one particular year, a TV magazine based out of California wanted to do a segment on me about goal setting, being that the year had just begun, right around New Year's. So I had agreed to do the segment with them. A week later, they sent out a camera crew to my office. Now, they get the proper lighting and arrange the office and make it look good and all that good stuff. And a day later, I call the producer to find out what day it was going to air. She told me Tuesday. This was on a Friday. So we only had a few days to call our clients and let them know that I was going to be on this big national show. So we made phone call after phone call, sent fax after fax. Tuesday rolls around, and the VCR is ready to record, and the segment doesn't even air. And I call the producer. "Oh, I didn't call you. I'm sorry. It's going to air tomorrow." What a pain. Wednesday rolls around, VCR is ready to go, and here comes the segment. They're talking about goals and will you keep them, and there's a guy talking about fitness and exercise, and before you know it, the segment is over. I went through all that, and they couldn't even call me to let me know I'd been cut. These are some of the things that happened to me. Now, I guess you have to look at it like Babe Ruth. The example we've all heard of him before, I'm sure, is very prominent in our minds when it comes to taking chances. Even though he had many, many more home runs than the average person, especially in his time and day, he also did what the most? He struck out the most. Why? Because he went up to bat more. You must keep in mind that the more persistent you are and the more willing you are to go up to bat, it's inevitable that you're going to have more strikes. That's just the fact that you have to face. But the other fact is if we're always willing to go up to bat, sooner or later, we're going to hit a home run. But if we never step up to the plate, how can we ever make that great hit? It's not going to happen. You know, some people who know me well know that I've gone through quite a bit of rough times, especially in my business when I first started. It seemed to be one disaster after another. I'll share with you a few of them. When I first started in the seminar business, I thought that I could just place an ad and people would come flocking. My first ad campaign cost me $4,000, which I ran in a newspaper. With credit, of course. I figured after the seminar, I would have enough money left over, and when my bill came due for the ads, I would pay it off then. Well, seminar day came, and I was all excited. Wow, my first seminar. It was to start at 9 a.m., and I got there at 6 a.m. Anyway, the time is ticking slowly. It's now 8:30 and no one arrives. It's now 8:50, two people arrive. Great, 8:59, three more people arrive. 9:30, no more people arrive. Ow, picture that if you will. Here I am in an auditorium that is set up for over 150 people and only five people show up and two of them are my family. I'll never forget that day. It was so painful to stand there in front of five people to give a one-day seminar. That was tough, but I refused to give up, even though I wanted to. Now, I'm $4,000 in debt, and I certainly can't advertise in the same paper anymore because I already owe them the $4,000. So I decided to go to the next city over and advertise in their paper. Maybe I didn't spend enough in advertising the last seminar. So this time, I'll spend $8,000 on credit, of course, promoting the next program. The next time, 10 people showed up, and five were my family and friends. I guess the word started going around, and they started feeling sorry for me. Here's another thing that happened to me. One of these shopping networks got a hold of one of my tape programs and they wanted me to go on the air and sell them. Now, I was excited. I mean, unbelievably excited. This could put me right over the top. I met with the company executives. They gave me a tour of my set. They gave me an air date of April the 12th. I'll never forget that date. I was very, very excited. I ordered over 2,000 tapes for the show. And then a few weeks before I was to go on the air, they canceled me. Then we had to start proceedings with a lawsuit. The list went on and on. Let me tell you, it wasn't fun. Not to mention being stuck with over 2,000 tapes. Believe me, this is only a tiny taste what I've been through. So I've often been asked, Gary, don't you think you're jinxed? Well, cursed might be more accurate, but the answer is no. So then why have I, quote unquote, struck out so much? For the same reason Babe Ruth has. He was willing to walk up to the plate time and time again. I too am willing to walk up to the plate time and time again. I know the more I go up to bat, the more chances I have of striking out and also hitting a home run.